lined up with him. Of course, in your witness list, if we're looking at the city and then interveners going, which additional witnesses do you anticipate calling based on where you are today, given that you're doing leapfrog with the city and the intervener for later in the hearing?
Sure. So putting the city's witnesses aside, I might have one witness, I would imagine, probably. There's a chance two, but probably one, if any, for reserved for our third day, I believe, on the 22nd.
And which of those witnesses?
So that would be Rocky De Herrera and potentially Trevor Johnson, but likely if I call any additional witness, it would just be one of them.
Okay. And just in a nutshell, what are we hearing from Mr. Haywood and your additional witnesses? What will they be addressing?
So Mr. Haywood's an arborist, so he'll be testifying regarding trees, the city's process for determining the number of exceptional trees and significant trees.
Okay.
And Mr. De Herrera and Mr. Johnson are both appellants. So, obviously I want to be mindful of cumulative testimony, which is why if we do call additional witnesses, it'll likely just be one, and likely shorter than the two witnesses earlier today.
Okay. So maybe expanding upon what we heard from our first two witnesses, same subject matter. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Without overlap. All right. Part of why I'm asking is I'm just sensitive to putting, I'd realize with the appellant coming last, there's the rebuttal opportunity as well. So, and I want to make sure that we have a witness on direct versus rebuttal, where there's a distinction in the record. So I'm expecting the witnesses that you've identified will be on direct and not rebuttal witnesses, so that they'll have their own unique testimony as opposed to simply referring back to what the city and the interveners have already said.
Sure.
I know they'll be listening, so it's not always possible to do that, but to the degree we can, that would be helpful.
Yeah, so Mr. Haywood did mention he would be available beginning at 4:15, so I don't know if he had to step away from his computer briefly, but he should be available to testify momentarily. So we'll keep trying to contact him.
Okay.
I don't know if the examiner wants to take a quick 5-minute break or just stay on while we attempt to reach him.
Well, it's tough to call. We kind of need every minute if he's going to get them today and not have to come back later. How much time do you think he'll be on direct?
Oh, I saw him just come off of mute, so
okay.
Perhaps he's with
me. Okay, good enough.
Yes.
Mr. Haywood, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. I had a phone call from another government agency
that's fine.
Contacting me regarding a report.
That's fine. Mr. Haywood, we're going to proceed. So would you please turn on your camera?
Okay. Where is my start video? There we go. That's me.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you provide in today's hearing will be the truth?
Yes.
Your witness, Mr. Gribben?
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Haywood. Thank you for joining us. Can you tell me what you do for a living?
Yes, I'm a self-employed consulting arborist and horticulturist.
And how long have you been an arborist?
I have been a certified arborist since 1989.
And since 1989, can you just give us very briefly your work experience, as an arborist?
Yes, I was employed by the city of Issaquah for 30 years, and that employment began in 1985, and I became a certified arborist as the new arborist certification program got started, and I was the go-to plant person as far as trees, shrubs, flowers, all that, and turf for that matter, for the city of Issaquah Parks Department. And that eventually became a role where I served as a liaison and an advisor to all of the city departments, primarily the planning department and the public works department, for all issues regarding trees and vegetation and that sort of thing. So I work as both a practical person initially in my job, doing tree pruning and flower planting and lawn fertilizing, all of those sorts of things, and then I became a person who basically updated the city's landscape ordinance and advised on development projects, initially just on city development projects as they impacted and required landscaping and trees, and then also I started stepping in as being an advisor on private projects for our planning department as well.
Okay, and so that was roughly 1985 to 2015. What have you been doing since 2015?
So since the end of my employment with the city of Issaquah, I have been a private consultant, and I did a certain amount of landscape tree pruning as well, because I've always liked doing that, but that has ended. I'm just too busy with the consulting world now. Primarily, I do tree risk assessments for people, which is hazard tree evaluation. I do plant problem diagnosis, that sort of thing for homeowners. And probably the bulk of my business these days is for development purposes. I do tree inventories and assessments that are requirements by many jurisdictions in King County, as well as Pierce, and, for counting the trees, identifying the trees, identifying which trees are in poor condition and not worth saving, for a development proposal, which ones should be saved, prescribing the tree protection measures for their retention, those sorts of things. So a lot of my job is generating those kinds of reports.
Thank you. And you mentioned you're an ISA certified arborist. Do you hold any other certifications?
Yes, I'm besides being an ISA certified arborist, I'm also a certified municipal specialist. I got that as I was a city arborist. But when they created that level of certification, I became one of those as well, because it was very applicable to my job at the time. I'm also a certified professional horticulturist by the Washington State Nursery and Landscape Association. I am a Washington State pesticide or a licensed pesticide consultant. I am, I have an EcoPro certification, which has to do with sustainability and landscape practices. I'm a certified parks and recreation professional, which was, you know, something that was applicable when I was still with the Parks Department. I think that covers the bulk of it, although I am, as part of being a certified arborist, I hold a couple of qualifications. One is which is called a tree risk assessment qualification, and another is the tree and plant appraisal qualification. So these are, in addition to being a certified arborist, they are qualifications you can obtain by passing a test and getting your CEUs, that sort of thing, if you are a certified arborist. Only certified arborists can hold these qualifications.
Thank you. And can you tell us what you did to prepare for your testimony today?
Well, I had a meeting with an attorney, Mr. Johnson, Scott Johnson. We had a phone meeting, a discussion, and I reviewed materials that he had sent me. And that was primarily what I did.
And do you recall what specific materials you reviewed?
Yeah, there was there was some SEPA information. There was the a chart on comparison of tree growth and how correlation between height and trunk diameter, and information done from LIDAR studies, as well as comparing that to information that is generated by the iTree program and some studies that have been done in various different cities throughout the United States, things that you know, I was familiar with when those were happening. I think there was something else too. There was also a sheet that's covered kind of the city's process and their information regarding the tree study and stuff that they have done. Some sort of an internal document that's being used and stuff was provided with information as well.
And do you have an understanding of what this proposed tree protection ordinance is seeking to do?
Well, my understanding is that the general purpose behind it is to preserve more trees within the city of Seattle that would possibly be lost due to development proposals and so on and so forth. So it seems to be that it's a tree protection ordinance designed to minimize tree loss while still allowing development to take place.
And in reviewing the material, I think you talked about it briefly, but you should become aware that the city performed an analysis on the number of new trees that would be regulated by this new ordinance.
I'm aware of that, yes.
Yeah. And what's your understanding in terms of how the city performed that analysis and determined how many new trees would be regulated by this new ordinance?
Well, my understanding is they were using the LIDAR technology, and they were doing it through a correlation between the height of trees, which LIDAR, is able to measure, and correlating that to the diameter of trees, which LIDAR does not measure, but they're doing a correlation kind of study as to how height correlates to diameter.
And do you have an opinion on the methodology that the city used to determine the diameter or the diameter at breast height?
Well, my opinion is that the correlation is not consistent between height and diameter, because trees don't grow in the same situation everywhere, so the environment that they're growing in impacts both their height and their diameter, and different conditions result in a different correlation between height and diameter. And then there's also species variations. So some trees have very thick trunks, and some trees are more slender trunks, that sort of thing. And so while there is a correlation, I don't know how accurate using this kind of technology is.
Now, what types, you mentioned environmental condition, what types of environmental conditions would impact a tree height, the correlation between the tree height and the tree's diameter?
So it's basically, it's light. Light becomes the limiting factor. And trees that are growing in a crowded condition tend to grow tall and slender. They grow tall because they're competing with each other for light. Light, of course, is necessary for photosynthesis and for trees to grow. And so trees in a dense stand will grow very tall and very slender. They don't need as thick of a trunk because in a dense stand, the trees protect each other from the wind. And so they put more energy into the height to grow tall to try and outcompete the rest of the trees, to get light. They tend to grow with, they tend to lose lower branches because those lower branches aren't getting light. And so the trees, the lower branches, the more branches on a tree, the thicker the trunk will typically get. And trees grown in open spaces, like in the middle of a park or something of that sort, they don't grow as tall because they don't have to grow as tall to get to the light. They put more energy in a larger, thicker trunk because they are more exposed to wind. And so they need a stouter trunk to keep from blowing over or breaking. Their branches also grow longer, and so they need a stronger trunk to support the weight of their branches and their foliage and such. So the same species of tree grown in an open grown area will tend to be thicker in trunk and shorter in height than it would be if it was growing in a cluster of trees.
Now, you also mentioned species. First of all, do you know how many different species of trees there are in the city of Seattle?
There are several hundred species of trees in the city of Seattle because many of them are introduced trees, ornamental trees, trees from other parts of the country, other parts of the world.
And among those different species, is there a uniform way to measure or to determine the diameter based upon the height of that particular tree?
Not that I'm aware of. There could possibly be studies done on certain things like that, because you can develop correlations. The problem that you would have is that the growing conditions that they're in are going to alter that from a species standpoint. But we do know that certain trees have very large buttresses. You know, they have a large base to them, and they always do, proportionately.
And so when you say that, do you mean that it's typically thicker towards the lower portion of the tree?
Yes, yes. The real base of the tree, that is the buttress, the lower 6 feet, 10 feet, something like that, is always thicker on these trees. It's just the nature of them. It's a species characteristic. Excuse me. Sorry, that closed the door. My apologies.
No problem. Now, are there other factors that would impact how trees grow, for example, topography?
Yes, absolutely. Trees grow in relation to their environment. And so topography affects trees. Trees growing on a slope, they are impacted. Their trunk configuration is impacted by that. Trees that are exposed to light on one side as opposed to the other side, that impacts their growth.
And
water table, soil conditions, all of these things impact the tree's growth. If they're on a very windy site, like on the coast, on a bluff or something like that, that impacts their site and their growth.
Now, for topography, you mentioned that impacts tree. Does it always have the same impact, or can it just depend on where the tree is located with respect to the slope?
Well, it depends on where they're located with respect to the slope. It also depends on their exposure to wind and the direction of the prevailing wind. Those sorts of things, they also impact. But the slope impacts them every day, every minute of every day, because it's gravity, whereas wind comes and goes. So where they're located on the slope and how they're rooted there and the soil conditions on the slope all impact how the tree grows.
Now, looking at deciduous and evergreen trees, do they have different correlations between the height and the diameter?
Yes, they do. Evergreen trees, conifers in particular, tend to grow with a central leader trunk more often than not. They grow in a Christmas tree type of shape. They tend to have a large dominant central leader and smaller branches coming out from them. And those branches tend to be more horizontal. Whereas the broadleaf deciduous trees, the angiosperms, they will tend to lose their central leader and grow in a more rounded form. They will grow very large branches off the trunk that we refer to as scaffold limbs. They will sometimes fork and have what we refer to as codominant stems, which are, you know, forked trunks, multiple trunks growing up. That happens more naturally, more often with certain species of the broadleaf trees.
Now, do you know if you can determine the species of a tree through LIDAR data?
I'm not aware that you can. I know that there are differences in how light reflects off of needles and broadleaves and so on and so forth. I'm not a LIDAR expert, and I don't know what level of differentiation you can make with that. I know that in the studies and such, the information that I've seen in professional journals, I haven't seen that, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
And do sometimes trees grow underneath other tree canopies?
Absolutely. That happens all the time. That's a natural forest environment. The regeneration of forests and such.
And And how would that impact a tree's growth?
Well, trees that are growing underneath larger trees are shaded, and so they're stunted, and they grow at a slower rate. And some of them, you know, their growth rates are hardly even noticeable in a forest-type condition. Interestingly enough, these trees will sometimes, maybe often, form a relationship with the larger tree, meaning their root systems will be interconnected. There's a mycorrhizal fungus that's involved in this, and the trees, large trees can actually support smaller trees, interestingly enough. So it's been documented that a large tree will often support particularly its offspring, seeds from its that it has put forth that germinate. If they grow long enough, they can connect to that parent tree's root system, and that parent tree will then nurture them by giving them carbohydrates that they can't manufacture through photosynthesis because they're in too much shade, so that they wouldn't be able to support themselves otherwise. So yeah, there's a relationship.
Now, in the documents you reviewed, do you have an understanding of how the city used the LIDAR data to determine the diameter or diameter at breast height of trees in Seattle?
Well, I don't know the details of it. I just know the generalization that they're trying to make a correlation between height and diameter. And, you know, it must be a very general correlation because of the broad spectrum of trees there are. Now, you know, they could be doing this based on the most predominant trees within the city limits. They might be doing it based on the most common street trees and street situations. They might be doing it on what are the you know, trees that, you know, grow the largest in nature in the Pacific Northwest, and so therefore they are the trees that they're trying to protect the most, that sort of thing. I don't know that level of detail. I did not see that kind of information in the you know, what I was going to review.
Now, the proposed tree ordinance regulates significant, what it calls significant trees, 12 inches or greater, and all trees 24 inches or greater are exceptional trees, and some exceptional trees are regulated at a smaller DBH. In 5 years, would you anticipate there to be more trees that are 12 inches DBH or greater than there are today?
Well,
There's an objection.
Clarify.
Please stop.
You're talking about in the entire city of Seattle?
Yes.
All right. Did that answer your... Did that clarify?
Foundation for his basis for knowing the answer to that question?
So, are you raising an objection, Ms. Newman?
Yeah, I'm objecting to this question for lack of foundation.
Okay. Mr. Gibbon?
I mean, he's laid his foundation as a certified arborist with numerous qualifications. He's testified about his experience with trees, and I'm asking him a question about essentially, will trees continue to grow in the city and continue to get bigger?
I guess I also object because it calls for speculation. I don't hear any analysis.
Well, I think that that's going to go more to the weight or value of the testimony. It's within his expertise to answer. Whether it meets a burden of proof or et cetera, that's another question. He's demonstrated he has the capacity to talk about trees. So I'll overrule the objection for now.
So Mr. Haywood, let me go ahead and ask that question again. Are you generally familiar with trees in the city of Seattle?
Yes.
And one moment here. Now I'm going to show you Appellant's Exhibit 3. This is page 15, table 5. And here it's talking about, you see this, the third column on the left says regulating with an expanded definition of exceptional trees, mostly 24 inches or larger, groves and heritage trees. Do you see that?
Yes, I do.
And then it says number of trees to be regulated during development, 22,400. Do you see that?
Yes, I see that as well.
Okay. And then looking at the bottom left column where it says regulating trees 12 inches and larger plus exceptional trees, do you see that?
Yes.
And then going to the third column on the last row, it says 70,400 trees to be regulated. Do you see that?
Yes, I do.
And do you recall reviewing this document as part of the preparation in your testimony?
Yes, I did. I do.
Now, given your experience as an arborist, would you anticipate 5 years from now for there to be more trees 24 inches or larger than there are today?
All things being equal, yes. There are certainly things that could keep that from happening, but if you just let nature run its course, then yes, I would expect there would be more trees of a larger size in 5 years than there are today.
And can you explain the basis for that opinion?
Well, trees grow. Trees typically get larger every year. They put on a new ring of wood and they grow taller. So it's just the natural, you know, course of events with trees. Certain trees, you know, some trees eventually reach the end of their lifespan. They senesce and they die and they fall, and those would drop out of that. But there would be more trees coming on at a smaller size, the, you know, 6-inch, 12-inch, 18, 20-inch, than there would be 30, 40, 50-inch trees falling out and dropping on an annual basis.
And same question for 12-inch trees. 5 years from now, would you anticipate to see more trees 12 inches or greater than you would today?
Yes.
Now, 10 years from now, would you anticipate to see more trees 12 inches or greater than you would either today or 5 years from now?
Yes. Again, all things being equal, they're not something else happening. Yes.
Okay. And would you also expect to see more trees 24 inches or greater 10 years from now than you would today or 5 years from now?
Yes, I would.
Now, in the documents that you reviewed concerning the proposed tree ordinance, did you see any mention about did you see any mention of trees growing over time?
I don't recall seeing anything addressing that particularly, no.
Do you recall seeing any documentation concerning projections of how many trees there will be 5 years from now that are 12 inches or greater?
I don't recall seeing that, no.
And do you recall seeing any documentation or projections concerning how many trees there will be that are 24 inches or greater 5 years from now?
No, I don't.
So I'm almost finished, Mr. Examiner. If I could just have again one more minute just to review my notes.
Okay. Thank you. say we may go over a few minutes just so we finish with this witness.
Okay. I was assuming that.
Yeah, we'll see. Very close.
No further questions for this witness. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to cross by the city. Mr. Mitchell.
Thank you, Your Honor, and thank you, Mr. Haywood, and thank you for all the years of that you served Issaquah in that role that you did. In your time, you said that, you know, basically after your 30-year stint, you were the go-to guy for trees and vegetation and tree-related matters. Is that right?
Yeah.
Did you ever count, or did you ever determine the number of trees in Issaquah and the width of those trees?
No, we did not.
I don't have any further questions, Your Honor.
Ms. Newman.
Just a few. Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Haywood. Have you ever prepared a tree canopy assessment for a large area, like King County or the City of Seattle and the City of Issaquah?
I have not.
And you did not prepare your own tree canopy assessment for the City of Seattle, obviously, I guess, based on that answer?
Right.
At any time? No. And just a couple questions about the idea that there will be more trees that are 24 inches or larger than there are today. And you said there are certainly things that could keep that from happening. I'm going to speculate on a few of those things. I'm going to ask you, do you know how many development projects there are that are in the pipeline or that are going to occur in the next 5 to 10 years that propose removing trees?
I have no idea.
And do you know how many trees might be removed, that might die in the next 5 to 10 years in the whole city of Seattle?
No, that would be largely weather dependent. We're suffering more mortality due to increased heat and dry summers.
And maybe disease could kill off trees, perhaps?
Disease always kills off trees, and some diseases are more prevalent when trees are stressed due to summertime drought.
Okay. Do you know how many trees individual property owners might remove in the next 5, 10 plus years? You said there are certainly things that could keep the trees from growing 24 inches or larger than there are today. And other than what I've mentioned, what are other things that could stop that from happening?
Well, what I was referring to is that there are things that happen to trees. Certainly, trees can grow at slower rates due to weather conditions and such. If something sort of, I hate to sound dramatic, but catastrophic happens and takes out a large population of trees, then we could lose a lot of mature trees, and that would take place faster than new trees coming in. Catastrophic events being things like huge windstorms, a new Dutch elm disease that comes in and wipes out a tree that is, you know, of a high population in our area. New insects like the emerald ash borer, which is wiping out ash trees on the eastern side of the United States. Those kinds of things. Certainly an earthquake, a hurricane, all of those things are, forest fire that spreads into. Any of those things could conceivably happen. Under the normal course of events there, you don't expect that. So that's kind of what I meant when I said by all things being equal.
Okay. Is it fair to say that there are trees that are, say, less than 24 inches in diameter that are not going to grow beyond 24 inches in diameter due to the species or the functions of the circumstances of where they're growing?
Yeah,
like, for example, there's not adequate water, not adequate sun, that sort of thing?
Certainly.
Okay. I have no further questions.
And redirect, Mr. Griffin.
Yeah, just a few follow-up questions. Now, Mr. Haywood, regarding these catastrophic events, have any of these occurred recently in the city of Seattle?
I don't believe so, no.
And I think you mentioned that it's unlikely or you don't expect that these will occur.
I don't like to be in the business of predicting the future, but no, it's unlikely that we would have a forest fire. They keep saying we'll have a giant earthquake someday. Someday they'll be right. We will. And it will devastate lots of things. But, you know, it's unlikely that we'll see that in the near term.
Now, for the types of trees that you see in the city of Seattle, would you expect most of them to grow greater than 12 inches? Let me rephrase that. Would you expect most of them to grow so that they have a DBH of larger than 12 inches?
I am thinking about that. I would think most of them would. Well, most of them have the genetic potential to certainly do that. Whether they are growing in good enough circumstances for that or not is somewhat debatable. There are species limitations as well. There are some trees which, you know, 12 inches, yes, 24 inches, they probably never will get that large. So it does depend. But the majority of them probably have that genetic potential and could do that.
Okay. Well, thank you. I don't have any further questions. I appreciate the time, Mr. Haywood.
Thank you, Mr. Haywood. Brings us to the end of our first day of hearing. Appellant has concluded presentation of witnesses for the time being. We'll return with appellant presenting on conclusion of the city and intervener witnesses. We reconvene tomorrow, June 15th at 9 a.m. Are there any housekeeping items we need to address before we adjourn for the day?
I do not have any.
No, thank you.
Very good.
Nothing further from the city. Sorry.
Excellent. All right. Well, I will see you all tomorrow at 9 a.m. then. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Actually, are you still, is anyone still there?
The examiner still is.
I forgot to mention, I don't know if we have day two Zoom link.
Okay, we'll get that to you, Mr. Mitchell. Thank you. We're going off record now.
All right, thank you.
You want to check that?
I kind of know it's out there, but I'll look.
I like Mr. Mitchell, but sometimes he misses emails.